Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Mother of All Shows, the podcast that takes a deep dive into motherhood and parenting with a comedic twist. Because if we can't laugh when crayon somehow makes its way to the dryer, getting blue wax all over our daughter's school uniform, then we're all screwed. I'm your host, Kimmy Gatewood. Today, we're talking about early education. Does if and where your kid goes to preschool matter? What do kids really learn? You hear stories of how parents do crazy competitive things to get their child into an elite preschool. Right now in your town, a Lori Loughlin type is photoshopping her fetus into competitive crawling photos to get athletic scholarships at a selective private organic co-op. And what if you don't have the spare $50K to have your child play with biodynamic Play-Doh? What if you just want to go public? What is a parent to do? Well, you're in luck because I speak to an expert in the field of early education, Dr. Deidre Jones. She has worked for 15 years in the early childhood field. She manages and advocates for high-quality, cultural, diverse, and equitable private, state, and federal programs. She knows her stuff. But first, I jump into the topic with Rebecca Johnson and Amanda Diver. They bribed me with wine to get to the top of the panel waiting list, and they each paid 2 years' wages to get in. Do you remember what you learned at all in preschool?
Like finger painting, drawing, chickens, anything like that?
I remember a performance. The true memories I have are the twins, the actual twins, these two brown-haired girls that had the most beautiful, long, curly pigtails.
Oh, my God.
And then one time performing. But that's it.
It's so crazy because we put so much into where we're going to send our child for preschool. And I'm like, I peed my pants once. You know what I mean? Like, I'm crying to miss my mom. You remember the twins? We put in Los Angeles, people put their children on wait lists when they're still in utero. Did you guys do that?
No.
Okay, that's how we're friends. No.
But because the schools aren't the same as like a small town in terms of you can't be like, can I go to a school next week?
Mm-hmm.
Most schools are booked in advance. So I did it.
It's like very fancy restaurant. You know what I mean?
I did it booked. Like March for September. He started preschool when he was 3 and I went in March. And the reason I did that is because preschool was way cheaper than a nanny.
Did you send your Vivian to preschool?
Yeah, she started at 2.5. Like she was almost 3. I guess it was probably 8 months before. Before she went that I toured a bunch of preschools just mm-hmm. to get an idea. And because everyone was so stressed about it, I was like, okay, I'm going to tour a bunch and just see what the hype is. So I went to one of those.
The hype? Preschool hype?
I went to one of those like $30,000 a year preschools.
Oh, yeah. Yes. What is it like? Tell me everything.
I
don't know anything about this.
Well,
it's
so
like
that was
Disneyland.
Oh, my God.
Because I was like.
Oh, my God.
I was like. We're obviously never going to do that.
Right.
But
like, I want to see how the other side lives.
Yeah, I was just like, I want to know what I'm missing out on.
Right.
Like what, you know, like Harvard bound thing they're going to have her doing that
right.
we're not going to be able to afford to do and I'll pine away over.
Right.
And so I went and it's like beautiful place,
uh-huh.
you know, all natural wood.
Like a campus.
You know, well, no, it was like a nice house with a nice yard, but everything was
okay.
like, everything was like fancy and lovely.
Fancy,
very fancy.
It's no Harry Potter land.
I mean, yeah, no one was riding brooms.
We don't have Ritz crackles here.
But the thing was, guys, then they were like, all we have for the children to play with are these gray blocks because we want, I'm not joking. I'm not.
No.
This is a real thing.
No.
$30,000 a year. And they were like, we have gray blocks because we want to, you know, we don't want to inhibit the children's imagination.
Oh,
so
man.
It's, and it's all child led, play led, which, you know, so is the school that she's at now. I'm very fond of this idea of like,
our blocks are pale pink.
It was just like nothing. I was just like, weird. So they play with gray blocks and sticks and they run around and do whatever they want. And you want to charge me $30,000 a year. It's not like she's going to come out doing advanced chemistry.
They're doing some weird dystopian future with a like institutionalized play.
They're ready for the future when we have nothing.
And then I toured a co-op on the other side that had like chickens. Which means that was all outside.
A co-op, for those who don't know, is like you share the responsibility of taking care of the preschool. But you don't. But there's a teacher in.
And then it's often much, much cheaper.
Yes. Right.
So you can go for like $300 a month, which here would be a quarter of the price of a reasonable preschool for
right.
normal
Instead
people.
Instead of $30,000, right. which is, I think, how much my college tuition cost
right.
at the time.
Right. And then wow. that I realized.
Jesus. Yeah.
I realized the co-op was going to be like a part-time job. Yeah. And I was like, I can't
do that.
You can't
do it when
that.
You're a working parent.
Right. right. It's like you're either going to. You either have to pay with your time or pay with your dollars. Right.
Well, and preschool is also like there's a difference between preschool, which is just like fun for the kid, mm-hmm. education. Mm-hmm. Or for me, it was I needed a place that had daycare hours. So mm-hmm. it's like mm-hmm. replacing daycare, replacing a nanny
right,
that
right.
also is not a bad environment for the kid to be right. in 9 hours a day.
Right. Because really, when we're talking about preschool, I think for a lot of parents, it's not like I'm going to get my kids started with education. It's not that. It's you need affordable childcare.
And education, and like the more strict educational curriculum they have is not actually good for kids that age. Right. So like a lot of what is now public preschools, a lot of them are more like sit down, start with your homework, start with your letters is not actually as helpful for kids mm-hmm. at this age. Like they need to play. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, you have to pay to play.
Right. Pressure finding the perfect preschool.
You know what else was really important about preschool? Mm. I knew some people who their preschool was one of those expensive ones, and they also had to be really involved. Lots of fundraising, Ooh. Lots of like mm-hmm. parent bullshit. And I really.
And it is parent bullshit.
Yeah. And I really, really was like, I don't have time for this. Like, mm-hmm. we're paying uh-huh. for our kid to go to school, and I don't want to have to also like. Interact with the parents more than just like play dates. Like we don't need to have a great 1920s fundraiser for the school we're already paying.
Yes, you know? In Los Angeles there are places that have like full on there's this like fairy fair yeah. right at one of the mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Montessori
I think that's an element. Yeah, that's like more of an elementary school. I think it's older, but still it's insane.
And there's the auctions and like casino nights and
yeah, our preschool has two big fundraisers a year.
Oh
like
my
that.
Gosh!
One is a 5K, like a family fun run thing That's that we cute. All do together.
Sounds
Timmy would
it
like
sounds,
that.
Yeah, I would love it.
Timmy made me run a 5K, forced me to for my birthday.
I forced Rebecca to do. Absolutely, it was the Johnson Gatewood Johnson Gallagher 5K race to the bar, and also there was karaoke. I liked. Half of it.
And you weren't in labor.
I wasn't.
It's actually really fun, mm-hmm. the 5K thing. I throw a bunch of the kids in a wagon and like pull them and
That's
walk.
So
I
for
mean, like,
3.1 miles?
I mean, I'm not running at that point. They're in a wagon. I'm walking. I'm strolling.
It takes
There's
6
neon
G's.
Lights.
I mean, these are four-year-olds. When they're not in the wagon, they're out walking next to us. And nobody's
this is,
going fast.
Right. I got it. It's like Hanukkah. It's 7 days.
Exactly.
Or 7 days and eight.
Eight crazy nights.
Eight crazy nights. Right, right.
Adam
that
Sandler.
That doesn't work. Yeah.
And then there's
eight
like
crazy
a
nights of a 5K. Oh, boy.
And then there's like a big themed fundraiser in the spring. Uh-huh. Sometimes it's some sort of themed party. Sometimes it's like a casino night. Last year it was a stand-up night and then an auction. Like, it's like
who
whole
does
thing.
The stand-up? I hope it's the
it's
children.
It's probably real stand-ups.
No, yeah, they had like, well, like one of the moms is actually a stand-up and then she got a bunch
okay.
of other legitimate.
She put on a show.
Like
yes,
the Sklars
yes.
for their school, they do stand-up. Or there's
oh,
a school
man.
That people go to that Beyonce is the mom and Beyonce performed at the
Beyonce
fundraiser.
Is the mom.
She's Beyonce. Performed at the fundraiser for a school that our friends... kids go to.
Oh,
she performed at the fundraiser.
My God. Excuse
kids
me, I have to transfer
too.
My daughter
I know,
immediately.
I know. It's so funny because you can just imagine you're like, oh my God, Beyonce isn't a cafeteria performing right now.
Oh no.
Like,
this
it's
is
like
a fancy ass school.
All right. It's a really nice cafeteria.
It's an amphitheater.
No way. What if they just have like a mini Hollywood Bowl?
Yes.
School?
Yeah, it's the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, it's the oh my God.
Hollywood Bowl preschool. You don't know about that?
For anyone not in Los Angeles, the Hollywood Bowl is a amphitheater that does all the greatest acts. They come by Hollywood.
You probably heard of it.
You probably heard of it. I've heard of it. That's where my Beyonce is performing at our school fundraiser.
But when you guys, I mean, you guys looked at a couple of schools and...
Who, me and Matt?
Yeah. And got a nice feeling.
This is how preschool happened. Somebody said, oh, they're doing a French immersion public school in our neighborhood. You can get in early if you sign up for this list. And so I was like, that sounds great. And so I just signed up for the list. And like Matt toured a couple of preschools. And I said, this sounds great because it's hard to get them into French immersion school.
Wait, so Lottie speaks French now?
No, well, no. She will. But that's, I mean, this is the thing. I stumbled upon something I waited until the last minute to do it. Stumbled upon something kind of amazing because there's one in Los Angeles. There's a couple in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. There's only one other public French immersion school. And there's like a 3-year waiting list to get in.
There's one in my town and it's pretty hard to get into. So
in your
it's
town? Like
Glendale has a French immersion school. Does everyone need to know my town that I live in?
No,
it's not Los Angeles. It's another town.
But town is such a funny word.
City? It's my town. It's Glendale City.
Small town in my section of Los Angeles.
But it's like another town.
One of the biggest cities in the United States of America.
Glendale? It's not a big city.
The fact that you called it a town in this huge city is just so charming.
But Glendale is not Los Angeles. It's its own town.
Sure,
but it's a city.
Whatever.
Come on, Staten Island.
I grew up in New York City. So Glendale is not a city to me. No matter what it likes to call itself. I don't think so, Glendale. Get a hold of you. Get a grip.
Get a grip.
Get a grip with your French immersion public school. That's
our rural life. You know, the mayor speaks French sometimes.
I'm sorry, my serfdom.
Hey guys, it's Kimmy, just chiming in here. According to Wikipedia, Glendale is a city in Los Angeles County, California. In 2018, the population was estimated at 201,361, making it the fourth largest city in Los Angeles County and the 23rd largest city in California. According to Rebecca, though, it's the world's smallest town. Agree to disagree. Or just agree with me because I found it on the internet. Let's get back in. Okay, what do you hope to get out of preschool for your child?
I hope Fred has an enjoyable time and eventually is prepared for kindergarten, but really it's that he spends his hours in a place that are not a living hell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, cute.
No, I hope he has fun and learn stuff and creates like relationships with other kids. And
yeah, it's kind of the same. I mean, I think it's for Vivian to get social skills, to have a friends group, to feel comfortable and confident in herself, kind of autonomous from her parents, and then yes, to prep her for kindergarten to some extent, and but kind of more for life, I think.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know for a fact that preschool is more about social skills than it is about actual learning. It's about how to negotiate. It's one of the last times in education that we actually learn and actively talk about those skills, like how to, you know, I want this toy, me too, how do you work that out, kind of thing. Whereas kindergarten and, you know, No Child Left Behind, we're still kind of dealing with the residuals of all that and like teaching to the test and all of that jazz, if you will.
I'll allow you to call it jazz.
Scoot bop, teach and do the scoot bop, 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 test.
They don't have jazz in Rebecca's town.
No, there's no jazz in my town.
Too risque kind of music for me.
No dancing.
No. But yeah, it is more about giving them a sense of confidence and sense of self and building a community for themselves, you know, and it's more important than I thought necessarily.
Oh, yeah, because isn't there a statistic that like kids who go to preschool then end up more likely to graduate high school?
Especially with low income and minority families. Definitely.
And that's why I know they made a big effort to make TK, any TK, because that didn't exist forever.
Right.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me about skewels. What have we learned today? We've learned that school is better if Beyonce goes mm-hmm. to your school or her mm-hmm. kids go to your school. If Beyonce goes to your school, you better be worried because she's having some problems if she's going to your preschool. But if her kids are going to your preschool, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, I think that's the main takeaway.
Yeah.
She should not be in preschool anymore because yeah. she's a grown adult.
Yeah.
Solidly.
Jay-Z, maybe he still needs a couple more years of ETK.
We've also learned that Rebecca doesn't know what a town is.
Mm-hmm. I do. I live in one. I think it's that you guys don't know what a city is from growing up in your rural roots.
And both Rebecca and Amanda networked their way into their schools.
Into our modest religious
preschool. Even though neither of us are religious, it doesn't align with our beliefs. We networked our way into the most affordable, happy, sunny school that we could network our way into.
Up next is my conversation with Dr. Deidre Jones, professor, consultant, and mentor specializing in early childhood education. She breaks down what a high-quality early education means. Stay tuned.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So my professional title is Dr. Deidre Jones. I am in the early childhood field. I've been in the field for 14 years now. Started as a classroom teacher and then moved up to be an administrator. I've been a consultant, college professor. I myself do not have any children of my own, but there have been several that I have taught, mentored, and then I also have my two precious nephews.
Aww.
That's great. So, yeah, early childhood education mm-hmm. is something that's very, I think, important to, and we don't realize how important it is in our society and how it right. can build a lot of confidence. It helps kids become better adults.
Yes.
And it's undervalued. And obviously the United States doesn't offer a lot in terms of early education.
It doesn't have as much funding as your K-12 programs would.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so then when you kind of break it down, there's even less funding for the 0-3 population.
Can you explain like what resources and the lack of resources that pre-education, like where does early education start, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
So kindergarten is when technically like the government steps in and there's public schools
right.
and you have
yeah,
education.
Where you get the Title I fundings and kind of all of that. So technically early childhood is considered birth to the age 8 or 3rd grade.
Okay.
But many don't consider K-3 as early childhood because it falls under elementary education. You know,
they're
it gets
basically
the funding.
Adults. So.
Right. It gets the funding, you know, from the school districts, and you have the compulsory education depending on the state that you're in, you mm-hmm. know, where it may be 1st grade. Even here in the state of California, kindergarten is not required. It's not mandatory.
Kindergarten is not required.
Kindergarten is not mandatory. The child does not have to start school until they're either 6 or 7, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. So, yeah. And then the goals in early education are to teach them what? Exactly?
So with early ed, it's really laying that solid foundation. So if you break it up for the 0-3, it's definitely that the focus is on the social emotional development mm-hmm. and developing those secure attachments. Then once you kind of move out of the 3 and you focus on the 3-5, you then begin some of the skills that are necessary to get them ready for kindergarten. So that's kind of where the focus is. But a lot of times when people talk about early childhood or pre-K, they're kind of focusing on that 3-5
yes.
area, like right before kindergarten entry, because a lot of parents are like, I have to make sure my child is ready for kindergarten. They have to be ready for kindergarten. But a lot of times parents don't know what it really means to be ready for kindergarten. They think it's my child has to be able to read their name. They have to be able to, you know, write their name. They have to know all the letters and the alphabet and colors and shapes.
That's right. And drill, drill.
Exactly.
Henry, get down. A, B, what's next?
Right. When really, if you talk to a kindergarten teacher, and this is something that I have done as I've worked in pre-K with the, you know, the 3 to 5 year olds, where I went to a kindergarten teacher and said, okay, what are the skills that you would like for your incoming kindergartners to have? A lot of them deal with the social emotional aspect. You know, do they know how to sit for 15 minutes at a time? Because again, a young child is not expected. It just isn't developmentally appropriate, nor can they even do it to like sit for 30 minutes and not move. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, a lot of parents and teachers.
I'm glad that we can all just say this is science. Like,
you know,
because airplanes are every parent's,
you know, but it's just not going to happen.
Good. See, moms, you're doing great.
Right.
Dads,
yeah.
You're doing great.
If they can sit, you know, like if they're 4 or 5 years old, if they can sit 10, 15 minutes, that's great. Do they know how to raise their hand? Can they communicate their needs and wants? And then, of course, you know, do they know, you know, some letters of the alphabet, you know, some shapes and colors? Can they at least recognize their name? And then can they get along with others? You know, do they know how to share, and can they be polite? Those type of things. If a child has those areas, those bases covered, it makes it a lot easier for the kindergarten teacher to teach the child what the child needs to know through kindergarten.
I always like to think about the things that we teach our children and think about adults. How, like, I wish some adults had like those emotional skills.
Right.
And you realize it really starts early. Huh?
It does. It does.
And the stuff you're saying about attachment, it sounds, I was almost going to get a little choked up. I'm like, attachment? Oh, God. That sounds so sweet. You mean like recognizing authority? Is that kind of what it is? Or like feeling trust? Or
it's the trust. Mm-hmm. So in the 0 to 3 ages, again, that's when that's where you get the secure attachment. That's when you're working on the secure attachments. So does the child know that there is someone they can count on that will come to their rescue, that will meet their needs? And when I say come to their rescue, I mean like meeting their needs. Mm-hmm. So of course, 0 to 3, they don't have a whole lot of language. So there are other means that they communicate to us. And so if they don't have the
like
language.
This, wah,
right.
Like
so the
this,
crying.
Ah! And so also.
Exactly. So the crying, you know, when they mm-hmm. cry. Is an adult going to come and check on them to see what is wrong? You know, of mm-hmm. course, different babies, they all have different cries, you know, and as a mother or as a father or any type of parent or guardian, you learn to recognize those cries. You know, mm-hmm. when it's a cry of I'm hungry, you know, when it's a cry of I need my diaper change, you know, it's a cry of pay attention to me, you know. And so
that's why sleep training is such torture, because they're like, help me, get me out of this prison.
You're like, I can't. You have to learn how to sleep by yourself.
Right. It's like so contradictory. You're like, yes, I want you to feel secure, but please go the fuck to sleep. You know what I mean?
I mean, and there would be a fine line. I mean, yeah, you know yeah. your child best. So yeah. you know when it gets to that wailing scream where it's like, okay, now they're in distress.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, and it's okay. You know, you have some parents that believe that if I, you know, run to their every cry, they're, you know, I'm going to have them spoiled. But right. really, it's just a matter of, does the child know you will be there? So that's where that secure attachment is. And as they get older, it's the, okay, you know, I'm being dropped off at daycare. And mm-hmm. of course, there's going to be that crying, you know, on both the parent and the child's part.
Yes, that is absolutely right.
Yes, what's provided in the classroom is all about providing experiences, because you have children that come from different backgrounds, and so they're all going to have different experiences. You have some that come from high socioeconomic statuses, so they experience more than those who have that come from a low socioeconomic status, or you know, those that live in a house compared to an apartment. They're children that all come with different experiences, and so the classroom is really a means to provide experiences for all children that they may not otherwise be able to experience.
It sounds like a utopia, early education.
And it really should be. It should, like, if you look at like an ideal classroom, it would be a utopia with children coming from vast backgrounds. You would have high income mixed with low income, mixed with middle income. You would have different family structures. You would have those from different cultures and races and ethnicities. In my mind, like, that would be an ideal classroom. unfortunately, I would say most classrooms are not like that.
Yes, we experience that a lot, specifically in Los Angeles, how it gets quickly segregated, very mm-hmm. quickly, by mm-hmm. socioeconomic mm-hmm. and also by race. Mm-hmm. And it's strange to have to actively push against it. It's good. Like, I have to actively think about it. What is the, you have children of all different races, ethnicities, religions, socioeconomic backgrounds. How are these children coming into the classroom, and are they treated differently?
I probably can only speak to maybe the research of it, because in my experience, a lot of the programs I have worked in have kind of been almost homogenous, definitely in terms of socioeconomic status. So I've worked in a lot of lower income programs. So I've mostly worked for programs that were either state or federally funded, and those tend to be directed towards the lower income families and communities. Mm-hmm. In terms of race, I've worked in some where it was predominantly Hispanic, with just maybe a few, maybe about a handful of children that were of other races. And then I've worked in some that were a good mix, and then some that were predominantly African American. Mm-hmm. And even that one, we had kind of some middle to slightly upper income mixed with maybe some lower income. So that's probably the most, in terms of socioeconomic status, diversity of a program that I've worked in. In terms of that, and speaking to that, you do have some children that are treated differently for mm-hmm. whatever reasons, either because of their socioeconomic status or their race, their gender even, and even ability. So children who have a disability, they are treated worse and differently than those who are more able-bodied.
Who are they treated differently by?
It can be by children as well as the staff.
Okay.
So teachers, you know, will even do it. Sometimes it is intentional bias. Sometimes it's unintentional bias. One thing that I feel that needs to be done in the field of just education in general mm-hmm. is really focusing on cultural appropriateness and really checking our biases at the door. Mm-hmm. And so really examining ourselves to really look at, okay, what bias do I have? Because we all have biases. Mm-hmm. But what's important is that we recognize our biases and we work on them and trying not to show them either intentionally or unintentionally in the classroom. One disparity that I am currently looking into and delving more into, and I've done some presentations on, is the overexpulsion and suspension of African-American boys starting as young as preschool. Yeah, you have like 3 and 4 year olds that are kicked out of programs for behaviors that, you know, their white counterpart may have exhibited, but they get a pass. But because they are Black, you know, they don't get a pass and they are treated more harshly.
Wow. And are you finding that more in more like mixed communities, or is it specifically Black communities, Hispanic communities,
no,
white communities?
It hasn't really, I don't think, been investigated as to like a specific community.
Uh-huh.
But research has shown that if the teacher's race matches that of the child's race, you don't have as many problems.
Got it.
But okay, that's not to say that there aren't some African-American teachers who are suspending and expelling African-American boys.
Perhaps out of like fear, or just like the bias
right.
that society has.
And that's really what contributes to it. And so, you know, even though we may be of the same race as the child, we're not immune to what society and what media is kind of propaganding and those stereotypes that are displayed about certain ethnicities, certain races.
Yeah. I was reading Michelle Obama's book, and mm-hmm. they said that bike story that her brother got a brand new bike and mm-hmm. a cop stopped him and
right.
made him like, you can't afford a new bike.
Exactly.
And it was an African-American police officer, which is like not the first thing that came to my mind mm-hmm. when that story was unfolding. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's no denying that there's a huge problem specifically with African-American boys mm-hmm. in society being overly punished and blamed for things. And I have 90s and nephews mm-hmm. and my brother and sister, they're mixed children. They're
okay.
half Black. So I worry for them every mm-hmm. day, because I don't think that they understand yet, because they're not old enough yet to understand like what the bias is against them
mm-hmm.
because of the way
mm-hmm.
they look.
Mm-hmm.
And Does that start in early education, well, how you educate kids?
Because actually, at a young age, children actually do begin to notice differences between mm-hmm. themselves and others. Mm-hmm. Even as young as, like, we'll say infancy, they can look at, you know, a person's features and just kind of realize, okay, that person doesn't quite look like me. And then as they get older, they're able to verbalize mm-hmm. kind of those differences. My oldest nephew, I want to say maybe before he turned four or when he was four, because he's getting ready to turn five, he was at his babysitter's house, actually, mm-hmm. and had told his dad, like, you know, I look different than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And of course his dad, you know, was all alarms, like, who told you that? Who said something, you know, yeah. thinking that something had happened there, but it was just an observation my nephew had made. Nobody had said anything to him, but it was right. an observation that he made. And as adults, we don't want to have those conversations with children because we're uncomfortable having them.
Right.
But we need to have those conversations with children because they do recognize those differences at an early age. And even it's at those early ages where some are kind of taught the stereotypes, you know, by some right. other adult in their life. And so whenever we as adults hear, you know, those stereotypes being communicated, we need to intercede at that moment and sit down and talk with them, of mm-hmm. course, in an appropriate way. You know, we're not, you don't want to pull a 4-year old and say, oh, you can't say that, that's stereotyping, that's discriminating, that's prejudice. You know, it's like those words mean absolutely nothing to the child. But
are you
going to
take
into,
away my candy?
Right. but breaking no. it down into language that they understand, like fair and unfair, right and wrong, that makes that person feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you hurt that person with your words and things of like that.
I don't like to shy away from mm-hmm. talking about socioeconomic and racism and just everything that is wrong in our society. It can be overwhelming as mm-hmm. a parent, mm-hmm. you know, so you kind of just take it on a case by case basis yeah. for sure. And I think the early education system in Los Angeles specifically, rich people go to private schools. Mm-hmm. And end up being mostly white. And then everyone in those schools complains how there's no diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a complaint. So no question there. It's just annoying.
It's true.
Now, can you talk to me about, just for anyone who doesn't know, about how early education makes for a better adult?
It starts with that social-emotional piece. Mm-hmm. For me, I feel that is the basis of early childhood education. They develop their social emotional skills, provided they're in a program that is high quality. And I keep saying high quality. And so, you know, listeners are probably wondering, well, what makes a high quality program? But
it's dipped in gold,
but definitely that social emotional piece. Cause I feel that is the foundation for everything because it teaches us how to get along, you know, how to deal with differences and how to deal with, you're not going to always have your way and you can't always have your way and you have to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I had my nephews over this weekend and the oldest wanted something from the youngest and he asked them for it and the youngest said no. So the oldest just took it and I said, no, you can't do that. But I asked for it. Yes, you asked for it, but he told you no. So that doesn't mean you get to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, now give it back.
Yeah.
And we're going to figure this out a different way. But I want to play with it. I understand you want to play with it, but he said no. So what is something else we can play with? You know, so definitely it provides that foundation.
You've just
know?
Talked me also through, I would say, 95% of the arguments we have with other people's children. I want that. No.
But take I want it.
I got to give it back. Can we find something else to play with? Let's get a timer out. You can play for 5 minutes. You have to play right. for 5 minutes. It's like it's good to know that they're getting an emotional education mm-hmm. while this is all happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, gosh. To come back, you said high quality. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
To me, what that would mean is that you have well-paid teachers.
Yes. Just as a reminder, listeners, that child care providers are severely underpaid.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So definitely well-paid teachers. You have a safe environment. Clean environment. You have a curriculum that is being implemented that is aligned with, we'll just say, the kindergarten standards. So in California, we have the preschool learning foundations, which are for the children 3 to 5, and you have the infant toddler foundations, which are for the birth to three. Mm-hmm. And those are aligned with the kindergarten common core standards. So as long as you're kind of following those developmental milestones, so to speak, and you're structuring your activities and your environment that's in alignment with that, the child will be ready for kindergarten. Mm-hmm. High quality is also the loving nature of the staff. So are they really there for the children, or are they there just to collect a paycheck? Mm-hmm. Those are kind of some of the things you have to look at. You have to look at the interactions. Do you hear a lot of conversation going on? I mean, even though these children are young, we could still have conversations with them. Even if they're nonverbal, even if they're infants and toddlers, we could still have conversations. You want to hear a lot of talking. You want to hear talking from the children. You want to see them engaged, and that the activities that teachers have set up are intentional and not just something put out to keep the children occupied. Mm. Are the teachers sitting down engaged with the children? Are they guiding them in their exploration, or have they just put a puzzle in front of them and they're off doing something else?
I got to check my iPhone. What is your personal wish, you know, other than the utopia for children, and then ultimately, I guess, like how that will affect our society in the future?
So my mission and vision.
If that's what we want to call it. Yes, your mission and vision.
So ideally, I would love to see all children, regardless of their income, being provided with a strong foundation early in life, like that strong early foundation. Unfortunately, we kind of see, you know, those that have the means, mm-hmm. they're the ones that kind of flourish. But I would just love to see all children, regardless of their income, have that solid foundation. I myself was provided, you know, a good solid foundation, and I've seen, you know, what it's done for me, and I wish that for all children. An ideal program, again, you know, as I spoke, is, you know, just a program where we embrace all cultures and truly embrace it, to where we're reflective of our own biases. We put those biases aside and we just educate children, you know, for who they are, and just desire for them just to be successful in life. You know, I entered the field because I was inspired by my first grade teacher. I wasn't even in her class anymore. I had, you know, moved on, and I was having difficulty with a peer, and she pulled us to the side and, you know, helped us work through that difficulty, that problem that we were having. And I mean, just for someone who was just that caring, you know, that really spoke to me. And so when I go in programs and when I work with children, you know, I want them to feel that same love and affection. Again, it goes back to that secure attachment, that secure base. Do I have someone that I can trust? Unfortunately, a lot of kids, they don't, you know, early in life, they don't have anyone that they can trust. And so I would at least like to be that person that they can trust, and that they remember well into, you know, the rest of their lives. And they remember, yeah, I remember, you know, Dr. Jones, or, you know, Miss Jones, and what she did for me, you know, and how she helped me, and, you know, whatever it may be, or just that kind word that I gave.
Can I move to Inglewood, Dr. Jones? I'm taking Lottie with me. Here we go. Here we come. Well, thank you so much. It's been incredibly enlightening.
You.
And you are truly an amazing educator.
Thank
and
you.
Just the way you speak about children is awesome. And I promise I'll turn off Minions tonight and get down with some Paw Patrol.
Giving all children access to high-quality early education should be a priority for our society. It helps set a foundation for the rest of a child's life. It's not just about academic achievement. In fact, according to a Vox article from 2018, there's a sizable body of research suggesting that kids who go through intensive education at the ages of 3 and 4 don't really come out ahead in terms of academic abilities. But kids who enter intensive preschool programs are less likely to be arrested, more likely to graduate, and less likely to struggle with substance abuse as adults, and are more likely to attend and graduate college. We need to find ways to get more funding for underserved communities to make sure they have access to the type of high-quality care that Dr. Jones dreams of. And if Beyonce's there, even better! I
I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Deidre Jones, for making me want to go back to preschool and for her passion for early education. I'd also like to thank my trusty pals, Rebecca Johnson and Amanda Dibert. We will be taking a short break to enjoy the holidays, but we'll be back in the new year with more fun episodes. So take this time to re-listen to all the episodes and tell all your buds. Thank you for listening. Please reach out to me through our website, motherballshows.com, if you have any questions, thoughts, or topics you'd like to hear. We are all over social media at MOASPod. This podcast is produced by Jen Perry Leamy, written by Rebecca Johnson, music by Jerome Curtinbot, and edited by Amanda Lund and Tracy Levy. I am a proud part of the Erios Network. Please subscribe and rate Mother of All Shows on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It would really help us out, like a gift certificate to Target instead of candles. We will have links to the topics and resources we discussed today on our website. See you for the next one, and happy holidays. Oh, and I heard that private school that Amanda visited is raising tuition to $40,000 this year. Yeah, they decided to add beige and taupe blocks to the mix. You can read more about it on our non-existent blog.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.